Want to get smarter about investing? Then tune in to the Capital Ideas podcast from Capital Group, home of American Funds Distributors, Inc., one of the world's leading asset managers. Each week, we bring you stock market outlooks, macroeconomic updates, and investment strategies that can help you succeed. Learn from portfolio managers with decades of experience about how they navigate uncertain markets. Prepare to be engaged, enlightened, and entertained by listening to the Capital Ideas podcast today.
This is the History Worth Saving podcast. I'm Matt Jolly. If you've been listening to warbirdradio.com and you've noticed that you have this show now in your podcast feed, it's because the name has changed. Same types of shows, just a broader audience. Hope you'll stick around. Today is someone that you probably will recognize if you're from the Warbird Radio crowd. If you're not, if you're from the History Worth Saving audience, you're going to love this guy. He's a friend of mine. His name is Jason Capra, and he has a project that he became acquainted with in a way that is just, it's divine. I don't know how else to say it. I mean, truly, it's one of the most incredible stories that I have heard in a long time, how it came to be. So picture this. Jason lives outside of Pittsburgh. He's driving down these country roads with a friend of his, and there it is, a World War II C-53 transport airplane that is just crying out for him to help it. If you're an aviator, then you understand this. Sometimes airplanes talk to you. They speak to you. The people who have flown them speak to you. And this airplane was crying out for Jason to help him. So what does he do? He takes that mental picture. And then every day until he actually bought the airplane, that image just chipped away at his conscience. Did I get that right? I mean, this was an emotional experience for you the first time you saw it.
Oh, it absolutely was, Matt. And I can't thank you enough for having me on the show today.
I want to talk about this because your life has gone through so much change as a result of this airplane. And you can get into as much or as little of this as you want on this show. But the point is, when someone hears your voice and they hear what you have gone through with this machine, this relic of World War II, it's impressive. And I think it speaks volumes about who you are. Tell me about that first time seeing the airplane when you had this sort of religious experience, if you will, with this thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's, I think you hit the nail right on the head. And I don't know what, I was actually driving home from my my recurrent at my airline that I fly for, which our home base is in Indianapolis, Indiana. I fly for Republic Airways. And so usually I always drive out to recurrent every year, ground school and stuff like that. So on my way home, I just got sick and tired of being on the interstate, and right around Columbus, Ohio, I got off the highway and just cause trying, I guess, to get lost and just go down all these back roads and make my way home to Pittsburgh. I didn't really know where I was going or why I was doing it, but that was what I did. And I ended up just to the southwest of Canton, Ohio, in a little town that I had never heard of before called Beach City, Ohio. And just like you said, I came around the bend, and I noticed some hangars next to houses and big grass runway, and I was like, oh, that's cool. There's a private airstrip here. And when I came past the row of hangars and the one house, there's this derelict in DC-3 sitting there. And again, at the time, I didn't know that it was a C-53 or what its history was. I just knew it was a Douglas DC-3. And my God, it was the saddest looking airplane I've ever seen in my life. And being a Warbird guy and a huge history, World War II history aficionado, I I was just dumbfounded that at that time, I guess it was 2015, 2016, that something like that was still just sitting in a field, pretty much neglected. And I parked the car and walked over and just walked around this thing. And my heart hurt for it. I just, again, being around these airplanes and knowing how much people care about them, it just broke my heart to see this thing. It probably had some cool story and some amazing past, just to essentially be left rotting away in this airfield.
And it does. It does have it. I mean, let's just walk through the list here real quick, because it opened the North Africa front in World War II.
Yep.
Your airplane did. Operation Torch. It was there and saw it all firsthand. There's a good chance that your airplane might have even flown some incredible VIPs at one point during that operation.
That is very, very true, yes. Yeah, the airplane was used extensively by the North African Division of Air Transport Command, which was the troop transport movers during World War II. Today, they're known as Air Mobility Command. But at that time, the transport world was in its infancy, in the aviation community, especially in the military. And this airplane was built and accepted in January of 1942. So right after Pearl Harbor, the airplane was on its way to combat and was one of the first troop transports our country had out there on the front lines. And its role as a VIP transport, troop transport, and hospital ship definitely saw it doing some pretty crazy VIP movements. As a matter of fact, when the airplane was involved in its landing accident in 1944 in North Africa, which is how we were able to locate the original crew, which again, in and of itself is a whole other story. But the passenger list just said one British passenger classified. And here we are in 2020, and I still don't know who that person was. So we can only imagine the clientele that our airplane was shuttling around the North African campaign during this time, people that decided history.
Maybe Churchill.
Perhaps. Yep. Or
you
even Montgomery.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. I mean, who knows? One passenger, though, for a huge transport airplane. It had to be somebody pretty big.
So exactly.
You never know. Well, so here you have this moment where you decide to save it. And the aircraft's history just goes on from there. It was Governor Rhodes' airplane in Ohio, the official state airplane for the state of Ohio, that ceremonially opened all of these airports throughout Ohio that Governor Rhodes was known for opening. And this particular C-53 then is bought by a private individual, and like so many folks, has big hopes, big dreams for it, and then nothing happens to it. It gets pecked apart by the birds and the weather and the rain and the snow, and this thing, it does. It's one of the saddest pictures I think I've ever seen of you. But then there's this glow in your face when you pulled the trigger and you took this step in faith to save this airplane. You put up your own money, and then you built this 501c3 around it, and you're off and running now, and it looks completely different. But walk me through this, because there were some dark days during this when you decided that, look, this is something that I am willing to put my own neck on the line for and make it happen. Walk me through those darker days, because I want people to hear that this was not something that came easy.
Oh, no, it wasn't at all. You know, I at the time when I found the airplane, I was a newly upgraded captain at Republic at the time, which was a regional airline, and it still is. But, you know, I was flying a Dash 8 around, and I didn't have a whole lot of money to my name at the time. You know, being a regional first officer in the airline industry, as anyone that is listening has done this and knows full well, in the early 2000s, the airline industry wasn't very kind to its pilots. You know, we were looked at as a dime a dozen, and the pay scales were reflecting of that. I mean, my first 5 years as an airline pilot, my first year I made $17,000 a year, and my fifth year I was only up to $30,000 a year.
That's right. Ramen noodle with beef flavoring is a steak dinner.
You have no idea, but but my love affair for what I did for a living just kept me going, and I I was doing what I loved every day. And at the end of the day, that's all anyone could ever ask for in this lifetime. But, so I just upgraded to captain, and, I was making some decent money. We were up, I think, in the 60s or something at that time. And, I was,
and engaged, if I remember correctly. I mean, life was good.
Nope, not engaged.
But close to it, if I recall.
Yeah, had a pretty serious girlfriend at the time. Yeah,
and that factors into this, because as this happens and priorities begin to shift,
suddenly things
change.
Exactly, yeah. And so anyway, all that was going on, and again, this airplane just kind of entered my life, and I was lucky. I had been flying a Warbird for another organization, and it was also a Douglas transport. And so I'd been involved with this stuff since I was a kid, and my heart was with it. And I always tell people, by profession, I'm an airline pilot, but my real true passion is Warbirds and World War II. And this is something that I had been dreaming about since I was a little kid in school, that one day I would love to own a Warbird and take it to air shows and do what my heroes did and the people I looked up to did. And, I always felt this really strong connection with that World War II generation. And I guess a lot of it probably had to do with just, the stories that I heard growing up and how my grandfather always spoke so highly of that generation. And I really admired him. So I'm like, well, if this is his heroes, then these guys are someone I should look up to too. And I think all of that kind of factored into this obsession I've had my whole life with World War II and that generation and those airplanes. And when I found this thing there, sitting there and rotting away pretty much, I just thought, I don't know why, out of all the airplanes I could possibly put my money into and go on a mission to save, it's this one. But I knew immediately, Matt, when I saw it and I walked up to it for the first time, I just knew. I'm like, this airplane and I are we're gonna go on until I'm not here anymore. This is my airplane.
And God opened those doors in a way that He does when something needs to get done and that He wants to have happen.
Yep.
And the money came in, not easily. And I remember talking to you and I said, look, the big money is going to be the easy money. It's the small stuff that's going to just drive you nuts, and it's going to be really, really difficult to do. But you have this grassroots group of people who have made it happen, Jason, and they've rallied behind you in a way that I think is just so special. Your organization, Vintage Wings Incorporated, has truly been able to put every nickel into the airplane.
Yep, that's 100% accurate. Yeah, when we tracked down the owner of the airplane, it took me a while to find him. He was very reluctant to sell the airplane. He didn't want to sell it, and told me how many times he'd been approached by other people wanting to buy it, and he just said no. And I kind of told him what I wanted to do with it and some of my background dealing with airplanes like this. And I said, look, I know you wanted to save this thing, and for whatever reason, it never happened. But I can promise you, if you give me a chance to do this, I can make this airplane come to fruition and have the retirement and the honor that I think you always wanted to do with it. And just give me a chance. And he agreed to it. But the deal was, I had 1 year to come up with $100,000 to pay for it, but he wanted $20,000 as a down payment. And I basically emptied my savings account that I had at the time.
Right.
And I did. I took every dime that I had to my name and everything I had in savings. And instead of buying a house like most other late 20-year-olds are doing at that time in their life, I put it all down on a Douglas DC-3 from 1942 that hadn't flown in 26 years. And I had no idea how in God's name I was going to come up with the rest of it and how it was even going to work. But I don't know. Like I said, I knew I wasn't going to fail. I wasn't going to let this airplane down.
Well, and here's what kind of gripes me about this whole thing. This guy who agreed to let you pay him really never thought for a minute that you guys would actually be able to come up with the cash. But he did let you guys start working on the airplane.
Correct.
And you started this process of restoration. And I think when you wrote that final check, there was a moment where it became real, not only for you, but also for him.
Yeah. Yeah. I was told by some people out at the airport that the only reason he even agreed to sell it to me and had turned so many other people down was because he thought there was no way in God's name I was going to come up with the money. And the deal we worked out was if I couldn't raise the money, he would keep my $20,000 and the airplane. And that was that. So it was a win-win for him as far as he was concerned. But I've never quit on anything in my life. And I think had he known that, he probably wouldn't have given me a chance. But yeah, it was a Herculean effort on our part as an organization that literally had just started to raise the remaining $80,000 that we needed to purchase the aircraft. And we paid outright cash for it. I mean, it was ours the second I signed the paper. And so now I have a DC-3 sitting in Ohio that hasn't flown for 26 years. We just raised $180,000, and it's still no closer to being flying than it was a year ago. So not only did we raise that money, we had to raise all the additional funds to get it out of there and then continue its restoration.
And the airport, I'm not belittling these people at this airport, but they were not incredibly supportive as this process continued. I mean, there were some folks there who were, but there was a lot of consternation over this, you know, and a lot of heartburn.
There were a lot of good people there, but there was a handful that made my life a living hell for a year and a half. And I mean, everything from driving on the grass, which it was a grass runway, and we would get yelled at and screamed at every time we drove trucks down to work on the airplane, that we were tearing up the turf. The guy that cut the grass at the airport constantly would cut the grass and blow it all on the airplane on purpose, or he wouldn't cut the grass at all. Anytime we needed anything, it was always a big ordeal. And then
you're just trying to get the thing out of the airport and get it somewhere safe, which just became, as you said, a Herculean effort. And by the way, this special friend of yours decides that the airplane has become too much.
Ah, yes.
And so now you're out of money. You're working your tail off to save this airplane, and you're heartbroken.
Yeah, so at that time I lived in Washington, D.C., which was right next to you at the time. And that's where we kind of got to know each other and stuff. But so I was driving almost every weekend from Washington, D.C. to Ohio to work on the airplane. And then I would turn around 2 days later, drive all the way back to Washington, D.C. and go back to work. And, and I made it very clear the amount of effort and time it was going to take to go into this project. But that became a very big issue for that relationship. And in the process of getting this whole thing started, we decided that this just isn't working and that I cared more about the airplane than I did her. And she wanted nothing more to do with me or the airplane. So that was the end of that. So now I'm in D.C.
Right.
And I got to get back to Pittsburgh, which is where I'm from, and I got to keep working on the airplane and raising money and trying to run the organization. So yeah.
And there was some other stuff that happened then, and I just remember you calling up one day, and I'm like, Jason, God's got this. You've got this. just keep putting one foot in front of the other. And I think that there are so many. I mean, this year, I mean, my goodness, this year, I can relate a little bit to this year. I mean, it's been one of those years where it seems like, what next? Like, seriously, like what next? I'm afraid for the next month, just because, you know, okay, what now? And when you've been through something like this, what do you have to keep in mind?
Well, that your faith is the driving factor. You know, I've got to give a lot of credit to what I have, to my faith in God and my work ethic. You know, God will give you the tools you need to get through life, but he's not going to hand things to you. He gives you the tools that you need to make things happen for yourself. And I think that's where people fall short on praying to God and lose their faith in him sometimes, because they'll sit there and say, well, I prayed and I prayed and I asked for this and nothing happened. Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. Nothing happened because you did nothing. And he's only going to listen and help you out if you help yourself. And as much as I have my faith in God, I also know that at the end of the day, the guy in the mirror is the only person that can alter your future. And I can either sit there and wallow in my sorrow and feel bad for myself or my present situation, or I can get off my butt and put my gloves on, strap my boots up, and make things happen that I wanted to happen. And I just figured, you know, there's other things, Matt, you know, growing up and, you know, playing sports and trying for different colleges and grades and stuff like that. And no matter how hard you try, sometimes you're just not going to win. And that's life. It's not fair sometimes. And that was my attitude going into this, that, you know what, if I fail, I've got nothing to lose. And at least I know at the end of the day, I gave it 100% and I tried. And that's all we can ask for in this lifetime. So I just didn't have any fear of failing. And as a matter of fact, failing was never even a thought in my mind. I just kind of always knew it was going to happen. I'm going to do this. Don't know how it's going to happen, but we're going to succeed. And I was listening to an interview by Dan Crenshaw not too long ago where he was being asked about being a Navy SEAL and said, well, you know, what made you do that? What made you think that you could do that? What about failing? And he said, you know, to be honest with you, he said, I never actually thought of failing because that might be conceited. But if you go into it failing, then you've already failed. And I just thought that was kind of ironic that I never once even thought about plan B if this didn't work out.
Well, and it has worked out. You flew the airplane out of there. It was a triumphant moment. And now you have a hangar outside of Pittsburgh where the airplane is continuing on this pathway of restoration. And I have to tell you, there have been a lot of restorations that I have seen over the years in you know, being involved in aviation and running Warbird Radio and all of these shows we've done for the last 10 years. There have been a lot of airplanes with a lot of massively, massively expensive restorations. But what is seen coming out of your little organization with, again, the grassroots effort of it all is just spectacular. I mean, this thing looks as it was when it rolled off the assembly line and flew down there to open the North Africa campaign. And what I love about your group, the airplane is just the prop that tells the story, that tells the story of the greatest generation that truly saved the world in a pivotal time. And it's those stories and the memory of those people that you are restoring, not just the airplane. And I think that's a message that is so important to hear at any point in history, because it is a story that resonates with a lot of people around the world.
Yep. Well, you know what was interesting about that, and I really appreciate your nice compliments on the work we're doing. We're just trying to do it right. And I think I was already in love with the airplane and you know, it became my life. But we took it a step further. And as I mentioned earlier, when we found out what the accident report from 1944, who the crew was, we wanted to find the crew and try and locate them. Unfortunately, fortunately, we were successful in that, I should say, is that we did locate all of them. But unfortunately, the original crew of the aircraft, they've all since passed away. So none of them are still alive. But I wasn't ready to stop at that just yet. I went further with the help of a lot of our members, and we found all of the family members of those crew members. And I've talked to every family of the original crew of the airplane, and the radio operator, both of his sons, Steve and John Filatico, have both been there to see their dad's airplane. And they were actually there when we flew it in and landed. And the more I learned about them and who they were as a father, as a brother, as a husband, man, it really just added more to it that these guys in this part of their life was left without a voice for the better part of 70 years, their family, and just something they never talked about. And these guys never really talked that much about it. And even for their family, we've actually helped answer a lot of questions that they've always had. And that was just, it was so touching and such a moving thing that we had this airplane with three faces that belonged to it. And now it's not just the airplane story we're telling, it's their story. And I honestly feel like as much as I love all of the guys that flew this thing, and their stories are awesome. But the one most ironic story part of that is the captain. And his name was Jack Bartlett. And Jack basically became estranged from his family in the 1950s and never really had much to do with his one daughter and his ex-wife at the time. And the guy went back to Ohio and kind of lived a quiet life and ended up passing away by himself. And his daughter, who I was in touch with, didn't really know much about her dad, only some of the stories her mother had told her. And between our records and what she was able to tell me, we were able to kind of piece together more of his history. And the guy ended up living in Ohio all the way until the early 1980s when he passed away. And I thought, how ironic that his airplane that he flew in World War II in combat was the state airplane of the state of Ohio, and he probably saw or heard this thing fly over his house how many times in his later life and never knew that was his airplane. And I just thought how ironic all this stuff came back together, but we were able to help Wendy, his daughter's name, kind of come to peace with who he was and what he did, and all because of this airplane.
I think it's a great story. And, you know, the focus of History Worth Saving is to focus right now on America and to tell some great American stories, because I believe that we need to hear these stories. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I love our country, and I love it more and more every day. But we need to focus on reminding ourselves of what a great place it is. And you don't get these kinds of stories unless you get out there and you meet your neighbor. And when I read, you know, I know I've told you this, when I read that Pew Research story that talked about how we just don't know our neighbors, and in the more densely populated areas, the number is even less. And you can't get to be friends with someone if you don't get to know them. And you can't like them, empathize with them, or even love them if you don't know them. And hearing your story today just makes you think, you know, who were the friends in Jack's life? Where did we fail along the way not getting to know that guy a little better? Because you know he was wrestling with stuff. You know, all these guys have been wrestling with stuff, and they're coming home today wrestling with this stuff. Your project, Jason, I think is just, I think it's what we need, and I think it's therapeutic in so many ways for those folks who are working on it, for yourself included. And I applaud you for it. If folks want to get involved, they can visit your website, Vintage Wings Incorporated. Tell them how they can do that.
Yep, absolutely. So obviously, like you just said, our website is vintagewingsinc.com. And basically tells you a very, very detailed history. There's multiple pages on there, so make sure you take your time and scroll through there. The history of our aircraft, the history of the crew, who they were. And there's a lot of restoration photos on there. If you want to actually follow the restoration progress, we're really big on Facebook and Instagram. And all you have to do on that is just type in Vintage Wings Inc. Yeah. And you'll be able to find us. But we pretty much post weekly updates on the restoration. And it's really neat. It's kind of like a not a live TV show, if you will, but it's kind of like an ongoing, you know, history channel, special about restoring an airplane. And I try and keep people as updated as I can, and give updates and show all the progress that's being made. And it's incredible. We do have an incredible group of people up there, and I can't thank the team that we have enough for everything they do, and everybody that we have up there that, you know, believes in the mission, believes in what we're doing. And I don't know, the airplane just kind of has that effect on everyone. It's funny watching other people's faces when they come into the hangar and see the plane for the first time, and they just stare at it, and the first thing they tell me is they're like, this thing has a soul. And it's just cool that other people can sense that as well. And she does, man. She has a soul, and she talks to all of us all the time. And like I said, I think that airplane is happier now than it's ever been. And I know that sounds strange to people who maybe are not in aviation or aren't pilots or mechanics, but as an aviation guy, which you and I both are, like you said, these airplanes, especially these older ones, you know, they have a lot of character to them, and there's a lot of history to them. And, you know, it is a piece of our history. It's what made America, America. And, you know, it's just, I can't do enough to put the time and effort in that I need to save it. And this is a full-time job for me on top of my full-time job. So, but I love it. And I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't care about it as much as I do.
It's Jason Capra from Vintage Wings Incorporated, VintageWingsInc.com. You can find out more about him. Jason, it's history worth saving, but I've saved the best for last. We have about a minute left here, and I just wanted to say that you're no longer brokenhearted. In fact, the young lady who you are, in fact, engaged to is so involved in the project, she's become the subject of the Beach City Baby, in fact. It is going to be on the nose. I mean, your lovely fiance, Emily, who I look forward to meeting at some point, has just been the cherry on top of this entire project. And you said it earlier that when God wants something to happen, he makes it happen. And I think your story is just so incredible that it couldn't be anybody else with the big man upstairs. Thanks for coming on, buddy.
Hey, Matt, always a pleasure, my friend.
Great hearing your voice. Listen, it's also great hearing your voice. I'd love to stay in touch with you. You can find us on Facebook at the History Worth Saving Podcast, or you can follow us online, which is even better. If you would go ahead and just subscribe to the newsletter, go to historyworthsaving.com and enter it in there. We'll send you a monthly email update with all of the shows. And to the Warbird Radio audience, you have been with my brand for 10 years. You've heard my voice come into your home. I truly cannot thank you enough. And my commitment is that this show, my show, History Worth Saving Now, is different in name only. The same types of stories that you wanted to hear will continue to be heard. Just a broader audience, a larger topic, and an unapologetic focus on the great stories. The great stories that need to be told from our country. I appreciate you listening, and I look forward to talking to you next time. Get out and know your neighbor. That's history worth saving.